palms pressed together, we say the Sufi invocation of Hazrat and Icon. Towards the one, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the message, the spirit of guidance. Oh, I said the message, but I think the prayer actually says the embodiment of the master, but we could also say the mother, we could also say the universe, we could also say prophets. It's universal. The intention of Murshid was that that word master embody all the master saints and prophets. And we invoke all of them here because they're our teachers. They are the holders of wisdom and light, which we'll be talking about today. Towards the one, take the sacred syllables, blow them as light into your palms, and bless yourself as if it's Murshid's palms passing over your auric field and blessing you, blessing us. So today, the class is called God Realization, Self Realization, the Teacher and the Pupil. And when as we go through the teaching, it was my intention because just a few days ago, well, 5 days ago exactly, we celebrated the passing of Hazrat and Icon 97 years ago. We call it the Urs, which means union or reunion. The Sufis often call it's the wedding day because it's reuniting the soul in the beingness of God. It's a return home. So there is a lot of celebration that happens around that. There is, of course, sorrow and loss, but if we can remember, and some of you, I've held your hands while people have been passing that are special to you, so you know how I feel about that. And they're always present, and Murshid certainly is with his body of teachings. Now, if you're not connected to the tradition, because I realize not everyone's an initiate, you can think of this as, when we talk about the teacher, a wise friend, someone that you would go to as confidant and an advisor. It could be nature even. It could be your interaction with animals. But we're talking about the teacher in this way that points us to this place of light and love within. So keep that in mind as we move forward. So from Anayat Khan's teachings, I would like to start this phrase because I think it's important. One thing is true, although the teacher cannot give the knowledge, the teacher can kindle the light if there's oil in the lamp. So we have to keep prepared, awaiting these opportunities to be, it's almost like Krishna says, you know, steal the butter, capture these moments of teachings that come to us, either through people or through the universe in general. I have put together, sort of edited and culminated or brought together in some way, pieces of Murshid's teachings on this subject. When you go to the website afterwards, and we'll send an announcement out, in the study guide, it lists all the references of the message volumes that I've utilized. Toward the one. No one can give spiritual knowledge to another, for it is something that is within every heart. What the teacher can do is kindle the light, which is hidden in the heart of the disciple or the student. If the light is not there, it's not the fault of the teacher. There's a verse by Hafiz, a Sufi mystic poet, in which he says, however great the teacher is helpless with the one whose heart is closed. So, you know, we want to keep our hearts open. We want to keep remembering to open even in those times when we want to contract and be closed off. There's something that's teaching us. In the words of an icon, in ancient times, the disciples of the great teachers learned by quite a different method not an academic method or a way of study. The way was an open heart. With perfect confidence and trust, they watched every attitude of the teacher, both towards friends and towards people who looked at the teacher with contempt. It happens. We look at beings like Jesus, great teacher, and yet he was crucified. So I'd like to highlight this this teaching of merchants by conveying my own experience when I was living for a short time in Konya, Turkey. I was visiting there, I was studying there, and I was working there in collaboration with other scholars from other disciplines, some within Turkey, some from within the region. Well, as you know, Konya, Turkey is where our beloved Mevlana Celaleddin Rumi passed and is enshrined more than 800 years ago. There is an exquisite mausoleum there that is so stilling in its beauty and so mesmerizing in its artistry, and also just extreme refinement in its atmosphere. This is where both Celaleddin Rumi and his father, Sultan Veled, are laid to rest, as well as other prominent teachers in the Mevlevi order. Well, I went there to observe and to pray and to be in the presence of these great beings, because even as Einstein says, an energy once created is never destroyed. It's always existed in the universe. So it's a matter of tuning. Well, there, it was a very complete school. In these traditions, they have what's called a madrasa. The madrasa is a school where students live together and study together, and the teacher lives there also. Now, in order to enter the Mevlevi order, let me share with you what I learned. First of all, the rooms were very simple and beautiful, one connected to another in kind of a U shape. One that wished to be an initiate in that order was first required to sit in the kitchen in meditative equipoise. Now, in the kitchen, there's this little niche that's shaped like this, and it's elevated, so you have to climb up into it, and it's really only tall enough to either sit there cross-legged or kneeling. The student, or the would-be student, has to sit there for 3 days. And during that time, the people in the kitchen do everything they can to distract that person, talking to them, dropping noisy pans, speaking aloud, maybe even offering, you know, jeering at the person. And the person has to stay, you know, present in a meditative state. If they pass that test, then they're allowed to begin study. Now, the study is 1,001 days. Sound familiar? Like 1,001 nights, the tales. So 1,001 days, the student is studying through observation and through service. Everyone has to participate in maintenance of the community. And they're trained. Nowadays, the training is very specific in terms of course, turning in the formal way of a dervish turn. And it's quite beautiful because all the dervishes turn exactly the same. There's no improvising, but it's magnificent to see it. They are also taught a kind of philosophy and psychology, human psychology, and they join together in practices. Well, after, now we've done 3 days and 1,001 days, so that's 1,005 days, then there are 40 days of testing. And only after this time is the student allowed to be part of the community. Well, it's quite different than what we have in now, you know, people go to an event and they get initiated. But I tell you also what I've learned from my studies in Tibetan Buddhism. In the scriptures, it says that the students should observe or study the teacher for 12 years, and the teacher should do the same before taking on a student. Well, that requires quite patience and diligence and certainty. But what's the reason for that? The reason is that we are karmically linked, the teacher to the student and the student to the teacher. We have to be willing to have that link. And if for some reason that link is broken, as a student, you would ask formally to be released from the teacher before moving on. In my own life, that's happened a few times. First, Murshida Vera, my initiator and guide, wanted me to go study with someone else. And she said, there's no more. You have to move on now. It was quite a difficult thing for me. I felt like I had got so much from her. She was a very good teacher. And I loved her very much, and I was very devoted. So that was a kind of annihilation, and I had to accept that. But moving on was a good thing, because I could learn things from others by doing so. So I did take up another teacher, and then Pir Vilayat also became my main teacher and gave me practices, and I did retreats with him as well as in group. Well, then after that, you know, I found my way to Tibetan Buddhism, and I respectfully contacted Pir Vilayat's office and the teacher that I was working with within that order to ask their permission to take up this study. And likewise, I talked to Khamtul Rinpoche, who was my Tibetan Buddhist teacher, and said, I also consider myself a Catholic and a practicing Sufi. I had to be transparent. You cannot be otherwise. So keep this in mind, please, as you move forward on your own spiritual path. But do respectfully, no matter what, even if the teacher you think has turned quite sour, just know that at least you've come onto the path with a person, you've studied with the person, and sometimes it's just time to move on. And so respectfully asking to be released is the thing to do. And it helps to release you from the karmic bond. I just wanted to say that, because this has to do with the relationship of the student and the teacher. Now, in the words of an icon, he says, students watched their teachers in times of trouble and pain, how the teacher endured it all. Students see how patient and wise the teacher is in discussing with those who do not understand or did not understand, answering everyone gently in their own language. Well, I'll tell you what, that may be true, but I've also saw Murshida Vera several times get the stick out, the metaphorical stick, and crack it at people when she felt they were being purposefully, as she would call it, obtuse. So she could be quite blunt. Now with me, she was always very gentle until the end when she insisted I go study elsewhere. But it can come in different forms. So Murshid says, the teacher shows a mother's spirit, the father's spirit, the brother's spirit, the sister's spirit, the child's spirit, the friend's spirit, forgiving kindness, an ever-tolerant nature, respect for the aged, compassion for all, and a thorough understanding of human nature. A thorough understanding of human nature. In this way, the disciple learns something that no discussion or books on metaphysics can ever teach. That is, all the thoughts and philosophy arise from the heart. And we know there have been these great beings, these great spiritual beings. They were illiterate and their hearts were open. They heard the word of God and they were able to guide people in accordance. So it's not just study, it's not just an intellectual process. It's a softening of the heart and making sure that the lamp of the heart has oil in it. Again, Murshid's words. It is therefore important that the student give up all preconceived ideas before starting in a spiritual path under the guidance of a spiritual teacher. You know, if we're full, if the cup is full, nothing else can go in. So it's good to empty, be childlike in our approach. If the student compares their own preconceived ideas with the ideas of the teacher, it's most probably they will not agree. The one who is sure of their own ideas need not go under discipleship. You know, I think about when Murshid was giving these lectures, what was he trying to teach people then? And what are we trying to do now? You know, discipleship is not something we're very accustomed to thinking about, especially in the West. We're very interested in individualism and self-assertion. This is a different kind of path, and it teaches us something very beautiful. I'm reading a book by a friend of mine who lives here. She's middle to late 80s, although she's quite exquisite. She was a dancer, a singer, and a teacher. And she lived for a time through Castro's Cuba. And her husband, although she didn't know it, was involved with the revolutionary movement. He was also a businessman. And she purposely did not know to protect her. But at one point, Castro's Secret Service came to their home. She had two babies, an infant and a two-year-old. And they ransacked the house looking for maps and, you know, communications and even arms. And eventually they took her to a detention center. And she said it was one of the beautiful homes in Havana, and it had been turned into this center, and it sounded quite horrible, although she described it in a refined way because she's a very refined person. But she said, we stood in lines as if we were in the grocery store, and what they handed out was, stay here, go to a dungeon of a prison, or be, stay here for interrogation, go to this dungeon of a prison that it was, I guess, an awful place to be, or be executed. So she was trying to keep her wits about herself and be loving, really, in some ways. She tried to engage her captors during interrogation. She tried to find ways to connect with them on a very human level. And, her main goal was, she knew her husband had gone away. She found a way to have someone, it was like a miracle that she could get someone, communicate to them in spite of her home being overrun with guards. But she got someone that was able to come and go, a relative, to send word to her husband, drive there to inform him, don't come home. And then she was taken for detention and questioning, and all she could think about was, I have to get home to my babies. So she was very measured and very mindful of how she would deal with these guards and her interrogators. And after a period of time, they told her, gather her things. Her things were the clothes she wore, a comb and a toothbrush that she had taken with her. And she thought, oh Lord, where are they going to take me? Because they knew if they went one way, they were going to, you know, if they saw the car go a certain way, they were taken out of the city for execution. If they went another way, they could go to the prison. But at any rate, they just released her. And it was because of this gentleness and her kind of not affronting her captors. She saw that people would do that. It didn't bode well. So, you know, I'm learning a lot by reading this book, because it must have been so unbelievably frightening. And I'm just reading the part where she said, you know, what it did was, you know, she realizes that it was a bad experience. And for some years, although she's a very happy, charming, lighthearted woman, her voice is even musical. And she walks as if she's on air. She's beautiful. But, you know, she talks about in the book how depression was her friend for a long time, having gone through this duress and this stress and fear. anyway, she managed. And I share that because it shows a gentleness of heart and the capacity to overcome one's impulse to maybe be egoistic in the spite, in the face of this kind of adversity. She saw other women fighting the captors. It didn't go well for them, so she learned from that. Silence was her watchword. So again, the philosophy of the heart, that all thoughts and philosophy arise in the heart. Mershit's words, it is therefore important that a student give up all preconceived ideas before starting in a spiritual path under the guidance of a spiritual teacher. You know, again, an empty cup. And of course, when we see the Sufi emblem, you know, it's a heart, and in the heart is a star, but under the star is a crescent, meaning it's empty, waiting to receive this divine light. So this emptiness, or this, in Buddhism, it's a no mind, don't know. So remembering that, again, all thoughts and understanding arise from the heart, and it's best to leave preconceived notions at the door. I found that with some of my most intelligent students, that they come with a lot of words, and then slowly they fall into a silent receptivity, which is quite beautiful to see that evolution. So Mershit goes on to say, if a student compares their own preconceived ideas with the ideas of the teacher, it is most probably that they will not agree. And the one who is not sure of their own and the one who is sure of their own ideas need not go under discipleship. The Sufi instead takes the path of annihilation. Well, what this means is not putting aside one's own ideas, softening, being receptive. You know, we're not punishing ourselves or starving ourselves or standing on one leg, or, you know, it's a kind of inner annihilation of surrender. It's a softening. Again, the Sufi instead takes the path of annihilation, and by the guidance of a teacher on the path, finds at the end of this journey that the destination is their very self, capital S, their very self. A person may either study for 1,000 years, or a person can get directly to the source to see if they can touch the root of all wisdom and knowledge. Again, Mershit talks here himself about, in the center of the emblem of the Sufis, there is a heart. It is a sign that from the heart, a stream rises. From the heart, a stream rises. The stream of divine knowledge. From the heart, a stream rises. The stream of divine knowledge. So just this is a caveat within this teaching. I say our spiritual teacher, our Mershit, our guide, our Sherpa, the one that guides us on the treacherous path sometimes. In the Himalayas, we had Sherpas. And they guide us to this heart stream. That's what they're doing. They're guiding us to this heart stream, the stream of all knowledge. And sometimes they don't do it with their words. Sometimes they do it with their actions. Or sometimes they do it with holding up a mirror to us so we can see something about ourselves. It might even be something we don't like, but we can learn from it, and we can soften it, and we can refine it. And then this is a quote by Mershit, and I'm saying this today because, of course, it's right in between Mershit's Urs, and we're coming upon Valentine's Day, so I thought this quote was perfect, and it relates to this teaching, and then we'll do a practice. These are Mershit's words. The work of the spiritual teacher is like the work of Cupid. The work of Cupid is to bring two souls together. And so is the work of the spiritual teacher, to bring together the soul of the myriad and God. So he's a matchmaker bringing us together, which might be maybe we could call it a reunification or a remembrance, bringing the parts home to rest in the heart. In order to do this, though, we have to, there's a process that takes us there. In this process, it must be opening the heart, opening. And Jesus said, knock and ye shall open. And also, I think it was Jesus that also said, ask and you shall receive. And Rumi says it about this door seal where the two worlds meet, and that we're crossing back and forth. When you think about it, Da Vinci's measurement of man, where do those two worlds meet? The earth and the heavens, they meet in the heart. Okay, so I'd like to work with this practice. We've worked with it before. I'd like to kind of do it again, highlight certain things about it, and we'll revisit it in a little bit too, because we're gonna loop back around and show its relationship to other practices. The word is fatah, F-A-T-T-A-H. Now, when we've worked with it before, it's a sacred name of God, and it means, O divine opener. So we're opening the doors to the heart. And it is said in this way, because it's said, it's when they spell it out or do the transliteration, it's F-A-T hyphen T-A-H. So it's a little bit of emphasis on that double T. And I think last time we did it, I thought, think of it like when you're trying to open a really tough jar and you kind of get that little air pocket out, that T. So that's what we're doing. It's like we're kind of popping that and it's opening the lid of the heart. So it's, and I'll say it, but I'll say it again when we do the practice. So it's Ya Fata. And if you say the Ta, you feel it's like a lifting in the heart. Ya Fata. Okay. So what does it mean? Oh my God, the meaning is so beautiful. It means it's both to begin and to open. So we take these steps inward in this inward journey, and then we're opening at the same time. Ya Fata is a practice. It opens the heart to infinite possibilities of the divine presence, because of course the divine presence is infinite. And this opening is continuous. It keeps happening. Ya Fata. Ya Fata clears away the veils of darkness over the heart, and it uncovers the light within. Ya Fata is the power to clear away obstacles and open your path for success. Ya Fata is a very powerful practice, because even in the midst of despair, the possibility of waking and love and ecstasy arise. They say, it's always darkest before the dawn, or in the dark night of the soul, about the pain in the owl's eye because it's struck with light. So sometimes despair is the light trying to push through us. So try to change it. And what's to be learned from that? Those difficulties are, when we're moving along and everything's great. But when things go rough, that's when we want to turn to God and our practices. But do it every day, it'll be helpful. One last thing. Ya Fata is an enlightenment that keeps happening. It's continuous. Again, this word continuous. And I was thinking as I was doing the practice, I was thinking about this explanation of being continuous. There's this quote by Jalaluddin Rumi, I mentioned him earlier, and it says, I become a water wheel, turning and tasting you. And then it says, as long as water moves. So what's that mean? As long as water moves, what does it mean? Well, it means that we're always journeying towards the goal, towards the source, towards this inner light, this sanctuary. And the goal is to reach the heart stream that Mercia just talked about, which arises the stream of divine knowledge. So that's our water wheel, this stream of divine law knowledge. It's a beautiful metaphor, isn't it, that Rumi gives us, this water wheel turning. You know, it just keeps turning. Okay, so let's do this practice. And we're going to concentrate here, and you're going to concentrate on that double T sound and the ah at the end. And see what it feels like. Even if you don't want to say a foreign word, try it. See what it does. If you really are opposed to it, just say, oh, divine opener. Divine opener. Open me. Divine opener. Make it your own prayer. But now we're going to just do this. Let's do it 33 times using Yafata. I love it. Okay, let's go. Yafata. 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 So I'd like to recommend that we do this practice over the next month and, you know, put the practice in practical use. So I feel like I'm talking a lot about myself, but hopefully it'll illustrate things, and please forgive me if it's disturbing you in any way. But myself, I have a situation in my life which is ongoing, and sometimes it does take me to a place of despair. Now, we're all healthy, everything's fine. It's an interaction. With a person in my life, and it is very challenging because I can't seem to fix it. I can forgive, and I can even try to forget, but it is ongoing, and it's at times unceasing. Well, I've been asking God, because I have to say I'm pretty lucky. When I pray, I usually get an answer. It may not be exactly what I'm seeking, but I get an answer, and it's pretty clear. But this has been going on a long time. So I thought, maybe that is the answer, just to accept that this is the way it is. And, you know, Joe and I were talking this morning, we get up to try to watch the sunrise, and I said, you know, things are good for us. If this is the only thing in life that's not right, then I'm very fortunate. So maybe that's what I'm trying to learn, is that I can't fix everything. I have to accept some things. But I'll tell you, this practice, Yafata, has really helped me, and I think it's guiding me. So use it in your life if you have some challenges. Put these practices to practical use and let them do their work on you. And thank you for letting me indulge in this story. And it will come. My understanding will come. So now back to Mershit's words. Sufis have no set belief or disbelief. Divine light is the only sustenance of their souls, and through this light, they see their path clearly. The Murshid's work is to kindle the fire of the heart and to light the torch of the soul of their myriad, their student, while journeying towards the path of evolution. I have to tell you, I think I'm very lucky. When I asked Murshida Vira for, again, I'm talking about myself, excuse me. I hope it helps to illustrate things and you don't get bored with my stories. But you know, she challenged me a lot. She made me ask her several times. And finally she said, well, what do you think you need? What do you think you need the most in life? And you know, I've heard people, you know, say they're seeking love, they're seeking success, they're seeking abundance, they're seeking comfort, they're seeking kind, you know, seeking, seeking, seeking. And I said, in that very moment, light. And she said, light? Why not? And she named some other things. And I said, because with light, the way becomes clear. And so she gave me this name, Nuria. Now, you know, there's another part of it that had to do with Murshid Kabir, but that became my name. And I felt so fortunate that my other teachers that were to come didn't ask to change it. And it's become my lifelong Sufi name. And I treasure it because I do think that that's very important. Light, divine light. So again, the Murshid's work is to help another person to find out for their own self, to discover for themselves what is true and not true. The Murshid is a guide along the path. The Murshid is the one who kindles the light that is already in the myriad. It's there, but it could be obscured in some way, veiled in some way. And we went through that whole body of teachings a year ago about the globe on the lamp of the heart, how sometimes it can be rusted. So here I'd like to work with that practice, the divine name Noor, the divine light. And I'll talk a little bit about the meaning of that. But we're going to couple that in tandem with Yahadi. Yahadi. So Noor is interesting because there's the emphasis on that double O and the R at the end. It might not feel comfortable for us to do it, but try it. So, and I always listen to people that are native Arabic speakers to hear the sound. There are others that have studied Arabic. They may have different sounds. And the truth is that there are different dialects. If we were speaking an Egyptian dialect, there'd be a lot more emphasis in the vowels. And in some other dialects, there's more emphasis on the consonants. But this is the way native Arabic, like classical Arabic articulation of Noor is. So it's Noor, it's a little roll of the tongue, but it sends a vibration. So try it. Noor, Noor, Noor. Just give it a try. And the other word, sacred word, and again, this means divine light. I'll speak a little bit more about it in a moment. And Hadi is, oh, divine guide. So here we're talking about the relationship between the tutor and student, the merchant and the murid, the guide and the one that's seeking to traverse a journey, a path. In this instance, a Sufi path, a spiritual path. Doesn't even need to be called a Sufi path. It's just a spiritual path. So, a little bit about Noor. Again, it's O Divine Light. And I'd like to talk about it in relationship to Yafatah, because here's the deal. These names don't exist in isolation like ingredients for a cake. They become all part of it, and they're interrelated. So, while Yafatah clears the veils of the darkness over the heart, it uncovers the light within, which is Yanur. So you see how one affects the other. It's kind of like vitamins. You take one and it helps the other. If you take vitamins, I do. And Yanur is the divine light that illuminates the heart. Murshida Vira described it to me. It is the light that radiates from within and reveals all things. So it's self-illuminating awareness. So that's Nur, and that's its relation to the Fatah. It opens the door so that that divine light can be touched, experienced. And then Fatah, again, it clears the veils and uncovers the light, and the Nur, it clarifies and it reveals. And the Nur is wisdom and guidance in and of itself. This divine, you know what, disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better, from the prayer Khatum. Now, Murshid knew this, he got it, and he told us it in Arabic, and he told us it in Urdu, and he told us it in other languages, and in Sanskrit, and then he told us it in English. So he's telling us again and again. Now, Yahadi, we say Yah before the sacred word because it's like a, it's like reverence. It's a referential term, like, oh, beloved, guide. So it's a very sweet way of addressing this sacred quality and invoking it. So Yahadi means, oh, divine guide. And now let's talk about Hadi in relationship to Nur. While Yanur is the light of wisdom and guidance, Yahadi guides the hearts to knowledge and to the essence of divine light, of wisdom and guidance. So there, I see there is this beautiful dance of interconnectedness. So let's do this aloud 33 times. Typically within our circle, I ask you to do the practice 34 times with the Yah before it aloud. You don't need to yell it, but you know, to hear yourself, to hear the vibration. And then in a whisper, and we allow the Yah to fall away and just whisper the divine name. And then that would be 34 times. So 34 aloud, 34 in a whisper, and 33 silently within, trying to hold the quality of the vibration. Feel it in the atmosphere, both inwardly and outwardly. So it becomes more and more subtle. Okay. But for this purpose, we're going to say it aloud 34 times. 33, actually. Let's do 33. These numbers are significant. They have their own meaning. But by working with them, you'll discover it. Okay. Remember, Yanur, a little at the end. Let that vibration happen. And then Ha, D. Ha is interesting because a lot of times you'll feel that Ha, it's down here. But this is like, almost like the Ha, D is like in the dome of the palate. So you're kind of holding that sound up. See if you can try to work with this, because it does certainly do different things physically and in a very subtle way to our more subtle bodies, the centers, the cells even. You could think of each cell saying, Ya Nur, and radiating light, and you could see each cell, like the top of it, going, Ya Ha Di. Try it. Ya Nur, Ya Ha Di. 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 Ya Nur, Ya Hadi, 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 Ya Nur, Ya Hadi. Ya Nur, Ya Hadi. Now, for the final part of the class, I'm going to repeat this statement by Murshid from above, and then we're going to do this practice while we gaze upon the image of Hazrat Anayat Khan. It's one where he has a beautiful elevated glance, but you can take it as the kindness coming from, again, a trusted friend, a teacher, a wise person that you know. It could be Jesus, because really it looks like he's actually sort of in that attunement of Jesus in this picture that we're going to share. And what we're going to do, first let me read the statement and then I'll move on. So from above, it says, a person may either study 1,000 years, or a person can get it directly from the source to see if they can touch the root of all wisdom and all knowledge. In the center of the Sufi emblem, there is a heart. It is the sign that from the heart a stream rises, the stream of divine knowledge. Now, in this photo, Murshid is wearing the heart and wings that he drew out and a jeweler made for him. Some of you maybe have seen this heart and wings, but I'll describe it to you. It's on a silver chain. It's made of silver. At the center, where the heart is, there's a yellow topaz, because this is a black and white photo. There's a yellow topaz, and the wings are detailed with the stone malachite. If you know it, it's very shimmery and reflective. It's a black stone. So it's a very beautiful emblem that Murshid wore. And so we're going to do this practice. And I would like to tell you that we're going to use now all three of these sacred names together. Ya Fatah, Ya Nur, Ya Hadi. Okay. And as we view the picture of an icon and look at the heart, sort of imagine that you're joining, you know, there's this whole process that we do in guru yoga in Tibetan Buddhism, where we first see the teacher external to us, and then we receive the light of the Om Ahung, which are the sacred syllables of the mind, the speech, and the heart or body. And then we imagine that the teacher dissolves in light and enters us. And so that might be something that you feel. I don't want to force anything. Please only do what feels comfortable for you. But you might just think of that, like just dissolving a little bit yourself and feeling this connection to this great being of you know, this master that brought these teachings, and after, you know, 97 years of him leaving this earth, is still inspiring thousands upon thousands of people. And this is just one vehicle of a message of divinity. So give me just a second. I just want to again turn to the prayer Katum, and then we'll look at, so again, from that prayer, open our hearts, Yahvatah, that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within, which is, of course, Yasami. And then Yahadi also, that we hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within, that guidance. It's, in Sufism, it's called the spirit of guidance. And disclose to us thy divine light, Yanur, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. It's a really interesting practice. If some of you haven't done it, you might think of these prayers, how they get interpreted in these wazifas, because they're embedded in the English, you know, they're implied in the English language. So if you just give me a moment, I will share my screen with you, and then the picture of Murshid will appear. This down. So there you go. So we're going to again say Yahvatah, Yanur, Yahadi. And let's just do it 11 times aloud. And then we'll take it to a whisper and then silently gazing and see what the message is for you. Feel that presence of the most loving being, and notice that heart and wings. Let it be emblazoned across your chest. And those are Murshid's amber prayer beads, his mala that you see also around his neck. Yahvatah, Yanur, Yahadi. 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 Now whispering, Yanur, no, Yahvatah, Yanur, Hadi, Vatah, Nur, 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 Hadi. And then silence. Take a few more minutes to breathe in this atmosphere of the sacred words and this glance, this living presence. And does Murshid have a message for you? Ya fatah, ya nur, ya hadi. So that brings us to the end, and if we could say, with love and reverence and devotion, the holy words of the prayer Khatum together. O thou who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit and unite us all in thy perfect being. Again, blow the light of these sacred syllables into the palms of your hands and feel that light touch you in the most subtle way, enlightening every cell, opening the heart to feel the light. And of course we ask, if there's been any merit, any goodness in this gathering, of course we know the goodness comes from Murshid's words, we ask that this benefit all beings. And then my little PSA announcement on Facebook or on the link through our donate page, if you're so inclined, keeps the lights on, so to speak. It keeps the website running. It keeps everything moving so we can have these gatherings, a base for our Zoom and et cetera.